Hello friends, the next topic of the this chapter, English verse, satire in the 18th century. Introduction: the 18th century is remarkable as a period in which the satiric spirit reigned supreme. The names of all the important writers are associated with satire. In fact, their very greatness is due mainly to their greatness as satirists. The three most important writers of the age were Pope, Swift, and Dr. Johnson. Whereas Pope, Dr. Johnson gave the English language some of its best verse, satire. The sound named gave it its best prose, satire. But apart from this redoubtable triumvirate, the name of 100 other leisure satirists can be mentioned. In addition to the regular satire, the satiric spirit peeps through other modes of writing too. The novel and the periodical paper were the two important gifts of the 18th century to English literature. These new genres too are exhibitive of the impact of the satiric spirit, which was ubiquitous in the age. Some of the most delightful satire of the age is provided by the periodical paper of Steele, Addison and their followers, and the novel of Fielding, Somlet and Sturm. As a genre, satire ruled the roost till roughly the third quarter of the century, when new tendencies appeared to the detriment of the satiric spirit. The precursors of Romanticism found satire incompatible with their new sensibility. Satire naturally declined, and since then up to the present day, very few satire have appeared which can show the same brilliance as characterized 18th century satire. Reason for dominance. All satire arises from the sense of dissatisfaction, despair, amusement, anger, and disgust at the departure of things from their ideals. Satire aimed at point out the chastening, the falling short of things from their well-accepted standard of excellence. It is only when standards get fixed that any departure from them can be measured or appreciated. In the 18th century, particularly its first half, the standard of human conduct were more or less well fixed. This century has been variously called the age of good sense, the age of good taste, the age of reason, etc. Almost all the writers of the age harped upon common sense, good taste, and what they called right reason. Any departure from them, real or imaginary, put the whip of satirist into action. Further, the accentuation of the political division of Englishmen into ways and trios also nurtured and provided much material for the satiric spirit. Nearly every important writer of the first half of the 18th century was employed by either or Troy or which party to further its cause and to down its opponent. Pope, Swift, Arbuthnot, Prior, Addison, Steele all were actively alliance with one party or the other. Even though they did not write many political satire of the nature of Dryden, Absalom, and Achitophel, and the medal. Thirdly, we have to take in account the fierce personal animosities of the writer of the age. It was in the 18th century that, for the first time in the history of English literature, the vocation of a man of letters, like other profession, became a lucrative job. With the unprecedented increase in the number of readers, consequent mainly upon the expansion of trade and commerce and resulting richness, the printed word could sell. Pope and some other dependent of their livelihood entirely upon the patronage of their reader. With the phenomenal rise in the number of readers, there was an equally phenomenal rise in the number of writers, many of whom decorated the garrets of Grub Street. Each of them was necessarily jealous of all the rest, as it involved his very livelihood. The whole air was thick with mutual animosities among writer and the personal satire which they gave rise to. Even Pope denunciated the most powerful and the best satire of the 18th century was expressly written to lash his literary rival and critics. His translation of Homer and edition of Shakespeare and had proved for him the most lucrative asset, and when they are attacked partly justly and partly unjustly by critics like Bentley and Theobald, it was reason enough for him to try to satirize them into silence. Formative and guiding influences. There were free from formative and guiding influence on satire in 18th century. They were the tradition of the Roman Augustan satire of Horace, Juvenal, and Persius, the tradition of the French satire of the neoclassical school, and the neoclassical native tradition of Dryden. The French satirists like Boileau were themselves influenced by the Roman satirist, and Dryden was influenced by both the Roman and the French. Let us now consider these three influences on one by one. First, as regards the influence of the Roman satirist, it is quite apparent in the work of Pope, Dr. Johnson, and others. Horace and Juvenal, the two greatest Roman satirists, did not write the same kind of satire. Horatian satire is generally speaking of the comic, and the Juvenalian satire of the tragic kind. Horace is polished, good, honored, precise, but sly, pretty tolerant, and somewhat lenient, and always indirect. Juvenal, on the other hand, is mordant, direct, intolerant, subtle, stately, intense, and disdainful. Whereas Pope come mostly under Horace's influence, Dr. Johnson was evidently influenced by Juvenal. Second, the Boileau was the most important of the neoclassical French satirists. Dryden himself came under his influence. Boileau's Les Lettrines was presumably the first example of mock heroic poem in world literature. Dryden's Mock Flecknoe was also a mock epic in the 18th century. We find Pope giving a mock heroic framework to his famous satire, The Rape of the Lock and The Denunciad. Swift likewise followed the lead of Boileau in the Battle of the Books. Scarron, the French poet who provided Virgil and also some follower in 18th century England. Third, last but not least, in the bracing influence of Dryden, who breaking away from the native satiric tradition of Hall, Marston, Donne, Sutherland, and Butler, he looked for guidance to the Roman satirist of their followers in France. Pope has well been designated Dryden's poetical son. His satirical provided to many model for numerous 18th century satirists. The Denunciad followed Mac Fulney in being a satire on Dunn's. But what is more, Dryden's popularization and effective handling of the heroic couplet for the purpose of satire had a powerful effect on the 18th century. Almost all the good satire of his century were written in heroic couplets. Pope regularized the couplet and made it more precise balance. The artistic and such provided a model for his successor, but Dryden's fair use of the couplet had also its admirer and imitator, among whom may be mentioned the name of Churchill. After these preliminary consideration, let us examine briefly the satiric work of important individual writers. The first, Alexander Pope, 1688 to 1744. Pope's The Wasp of Twickenham was the greatest verse satirist of not only the 18th century but of all centuries. It is interesting to note that almost every discussion of his satire boiled down to discussion of his personality. The phase of outright condemnation of the Pope as a mischievous and malicious imp is now over. To quote Brevoort in A History of English Literature, edited by Hardin Crase, in inverted comma, recent scholarship has made important correction of the traditional view of Pope, and he is now receiving a more sympathetic hearing. Inverted comma closed. We no longer agree to such view as the one of Latin Strachey, which represents Pope as a malevolent monkey sitting in a window and pouring on the passers-by, for whom he has dislike. ladle full of boiling oil. Sometime Pope did hit first, but more often he was hit first. Pope himself was designed by God to be a rich satirist target. He was satured, hunchbacked and lame, and then he was a Roman Catholic. But above all, he was a successful writer, the author of numerous bestsellers. Naturally enough, he excited the spleen of a host of pen drivers, whom at a place of compressed to a swarm and gants plaguing him. We have also to take into account his revengeful and somewhat malicious temperament. After getting hit, he could not just connive at the attack. He rose from the depth of anger and disgust and made short work of most of his disparagers. None could match him in his most telling use of heroic couplet. Well could he claim that he was proud to see men not afraid to God, afraid of me. Happily did he keep politics and religion out of satire. With the exception of Rape of Locke, which is general satire on female frivolities, all his major satire are characterized by indulgence in personalities. To name all persons he attacked in his satire would require 10 of face. His greatest satire, The Denunciad, is in its fundamental and satire on the contemporary dunces who had happened to often him. Pope's friends. Pope's companion Arbuthnot, Swift, Prior and Gay, who were like him, member of Troy Scrambler's Club, also distinguished themselves as a satirist, but Arbuthnot wrote only in prose. Swift, as we have already said, was the greatest prose satirist of the age, but he also wrote some worse satire. The seldom used the heroic couplet and cast almost all his worst satire in the octosyllabic couplet and Butler's Hudibras. Most of them do not rise above the level of Doggerel. Cousin Swift, you will never be a poet. This was the verdict of Dryden, and he was right. Much of Swift's verse, as his prose, is besmirched in eschatological grossness. Swift takes an almost morbid pleasure in dwelling on the filth of the human, particularly the female body. His misogynistic poem, like A Beautiful Young Nymph Going to Bed, are almost unreadable. Here is an example from one of his poems. Had you but throw a cranny's bed on house to ease your future bread, and all the posture of a face which nature gives in such a case, distortion, groaning, shattering, having, 'twere better you had licked after leavings than from experience find too late your goddess crown of filthy mate. It is nothing more than chamber pot poetry. However, Swift is delightful, ironical in such poems as The Depth of Dr. Swift and The Furniture of a Woman's Mind, which are happily free from the eschatological taint. Matthew Prior's 1664-1721 contribution to satire is his parody of Dryden's The Hind and the Panther, entitled Story of the Country Mouse, 1687, and his hubristic satire on philosophy, entitled Alma, or The Progress of the Mind, in which he traces the advance of the soul from the ankles of childhood to the head in the maturity. Prior is best known not for satiric satire, however, but for his light, topical, anacreontic verse and his numerous poems for children. John Gay, 1685-1732, showed better talent for burlesque than Prior did. Informality and burlesque, says George Sedbone, permeated most of Gay's works. His most important work, The Beggar's Opera also was a satire on the parody of Italian opera so popular then. Wine is again a burlesque of Ambrose, Phyllis Cader, Trivia, or the Art of Walking in the Street in London as a parody of the Georgics of Virgil. It was the most famous of the town eclogues. Written also by such writers as Swift, Lady Mary Wharton Montague, and some other. Gay, at any rate, did not taint his piece with bitter satire. His satire is mostly impersonal and essentially good-natured and gay. His tombstone carries the following inscription composed by himself: "Life is a jest, and all things show it. I thought no once, but now I know it." We may also refer here the work of Edward Young, 1683 to 1765, who was one of the first imitators of Horace in the 18th century. Sir Burne observed in inverted comma, "The first Horatian satire to achieve real success were the seven that Edward Young published in 1725 to 28, has Love of Fame, The Universal Passion." Practically all of Pope's satire post dated those of Young, which were highly praised. Note comma closed. Dr. Johnson, 1709 to 84. Dr. Johnson was a satirist ranked next only the Pope among the worst satirists of the 18th century. In addition to being a satirist, he was, to quote Lewis, a short history of English literature, a translator, journalist, lexicographer, commentator, novelist, biographer, and finally literary critic. Comma closed. His two worst satire are London, 1738, and The Vanity of Human Vices, 1746, the latter of which is superior to the former. London is a satire on the great city which he loved so passionately. There is the language of the heart in his question, "When can starving merit find a home?" There is a real pathos in the line which describes the misfortune of talented and enlightened men of letters who are readily treated by rich fools. The Vanity of Human Vices is, according to Edmund Gosse, in noted comma, a much finer and more accomplished production. Noted comma closed. Johnson based his weighty poem on the tense satire of Juvenal Hoste's manner he tried fairly successfully to imitate. Johnson's tally in heavy-handed and serious, and his attitude to his juvenilian and its pessimism and noble disdain. He has often been charged with verbosity and prosaicness, and Wordsworth in the preface of Lyrical Ballads gave him a rather reduced and disparage. However, modern critics, after the example of T.S. Eliot, have rehabilitated him as a poet. T.S. Eliot praised his poetry for what he calls its minimal quality, that of direct, complete, and effective statement. Referring to a passage in The Vanity of Human Vices, he justly inquires, "If it is not poetry, what is it?" Charles Churchill, 1731 to 64, and minor satirist. After Johnson, we find in the rest of century few satirists of his stature. Not to speak of that of Pope, the most outstanding among the numerous minor satirists was Charles Churchill, a man of dissolute and ferocious character, who did Young the dissipation. He failed in the vocation of a clergyman, and in utter disgust of the word satire, writing extremely modern satire against whose over crossed his way. He was particularly served on Dr. Johnson and the famous painter and engraver Hogarth. He keenly disliked Pope, and in the handling of the heroic couplet, he followed the lead of Dryden, who had handled it with much greater freedom than Pope. Much of his satire is of the personal kind of scarcely rise above chorus lampoonery, but there is always in the devilish strength. Churchill was particularly good at the art of satiric portraiture, and his portrait of Pompeo, Dr. Johnson, in The Ghost, 1762-63, includes remarkable The Times, 1664, was a general satire on the vices of Londoner. The Duelist was a virulent attack on Warburton and Lord Sandwich, as they were against Churchill. Hero John Wilkes, who had incurred the wrath of George III. The Roseate, 1761, was a very vigorous satire on some famous actors of the day. Edmund Gosse observed about Churchill, in inverted comma, "The happiness of others is a calamity to him, and his work would excite in us an extremely of aversion, if it is were not that its very violence betray the exasperation and wretchedness in its unfortunate author." Inverted comma closed. William Cowper, 1731-1800, is much less known for his satiric than non-satiric works. His poems, 1782, contain many satiric pieces in such a subject as the progress of reader, truth, hope and charity, conversation and retirement. William Blake, 1757-1827, was a poet of his own kind. Some of his poems, like London, are satirical in temper. Among the little known poet may be mentioned John Walcott, an opponent of George III, like Churchill, who wrote the Lausiade. William Gifford is in The Viviad, 1794, and The Maviad, 1795, satirized bad critics than the poet now justly forgotten. Canning and Fair, an anti-Jacobian, denounced and revolutionary zeal of poets like Southey and Coleridge. The last 20 years of the 18th century were a period of singular inactivity as regards not only satiric poetry but all poetry. English verse satire in the 18th century over.